medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome to the JDE Connection live from Blueprint 4D at the Hilton Anatole in Dallas, Texas.
Anatole?
I'm not even sure.
Yeah,
honestly. I'm going to roll with it.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm Chandra Wapshal, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the business solutions lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week and most weeks is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Howe Cooper, Vice President of J.D. Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you here.
Yeah, long time no see.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, this really is really hard to like do. You're usually on a screen in front of me. I can read you that way. Now I got to do this side thing. And
I
then
know.
You got all those people out there. It just means we don't make eye contact. Quite fantastic. Steve's doing
exactly.
Stuff.
They're making faces. So how's the conference been for you so far?
I think it's been fantastic, except for the fact that my girlfriend's more attracted to the 2037 version of me from Monday morning than... Anyway, you haven't seen the video, so you don't know.
Oh, I get, just wait.
In the next 10 years, I get taller, thinner, the hair comes out. It's fantastic.
It's,
yeah, it's...
And
yeah.
His golf game got better.
And my golf game got better. I actually got a decent swing now.
I know.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
AI changes everything.
It does. It's a game changer.
So how's the conference so far for you?
Good.
Yeah?
Good. I'm enjoying it. Spent the afternoon in the executive forum yesterday. Been running around at a couple different things this morning. As a Quest board member, I don't get full control of my schedule at these events. Well, this one in particular. So sometimes board duties call. Mm-hmm. But they let me out for this one.
Yes.
It was nice of them.
That's nice of them.
I know, isn't it?
All right. What was I going to ask you? I can't even remember. Shoot.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, it might come back to you.
It might.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe if we had notes and an outline, it might.
I'll work on that.
All right.
Okay, I'll tell that AI agent that I have to get on that. Oh, yeah. Oh, night. Wake up.
Night. Oh, yeah, with the hat, it's probably not going to recognize you.
Oh, you're right, because I don't wear cowboy hats at work. I know
okay.
That's weird.
There we go.
I should, though. Start a new trend.
There you go. In case you guys were worried, we're not going to be able to get through a session without at least one Excel spreadsheet today, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what JDE stands for.
I've heard, but please remind me.
Just do it in Excel.
Ouch. JDE. Yeah.
JDE.
That's brutal.
I know.
Ouch. I wrote the software, though.
Well, I'm a recovering accountant. We can't possibly think in anything other than Excel. We just don't know what to do without Excel. If you take Excel away, I'm dead in the water. I don't know what to do. I can't do math without it either, in case you were wondering.
I mean, I can tell when you've been in a spreadsheet because you get really excited.
True story.
Yeah.
Yeah, my pivot tables.
I walked away for 5 minutes. I came back. She's bouncing off the walls. I'm like, data. Data.
I like data.
All right, well, what are we actually talking about today? Why do we have folks here?
I don't know. I thought you were going to plan it.
Probably something about modernization, since that's been the theme this week, right?
It has been.
Something like that.
Right? You're right. That's exactly what we're talking about today. Modernization. Sweet. So you come to these conferences, people are talking about modernizing their JDE. What does that mean? Where do I start? How do I do it?
Maybe, that's a really good question.
I know. It is. Don't you have any answers?
Yeah.
You wrote the software.
That's true. Hey, I gave 3 approaches up on stage yesterday. So
my job's done.
My job's done. So this is all you.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
So
I don't know how many of you have ever taken a scroll through your menus on E1. Years of stuff, and maybe your menus look like about the same size of ceiling to floor. Maybe you've got E1 pages that either haven't been uplifted or they've got stuff on them that no one ever uses anymore. Maybe you're new to a company. That's me. And you're trying to figure out, what exactly do my people use here anyway? Right? Like, who uses what and what do you do? Because trust me, when I went and looked at the menus, I went, oh, good Lord. When I looked at our pages, I went, ooh. Ooh, we need some work, but that's a story for another time. So that's obviously one place we can start, right? Just even going through our menus. But we'll get to how to do that best in just a sec. How many of you have ever opened up like interactive versions, put in P4310 just to see like how many versions of something you have?
How many? 20. Oh, well, you're missing a zero. 79.
246.
Ding, ding, ding. Hey, you get a hat.
I have one. Thank you. Yes, we have 246 versions of P4310.
I just want to know how that happens.
So do I. Who's in control here?
I mean, it'd be one thing. I mean, sales order entry has at least that many processing options. So,
well,
I
true.
Mean,
good point.
Right.
Yeah. So one of the ways you can maybe figure out, hey, what are we using? That's a really good place to start, right? Do we have stuff on our menus that we're not using? Mm-hmm. Well, what are we using specifically? How many of you in this room have object usage tracking turned on?
Yes.
Several. Okay, so a good. Couple. How many of you are actually using it?
Well, what are we using it for?
Four.
My guess is more of an audit, self-auditing, self-policing, so to speak.
Or knowing what objects upgrades. You need to retrofit at an upgrade.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Because it feeds right into impact analysis. So if you've got all these customizations and you haven't gotten through Pete's methodology yet, eliminated them all, right? You want to know which ones you're actually using and which ones you're not. So obviously that can help. But if it can tell you that, it can tell you in general what exactly
what you're using.
Yeah.
So.
Hence the name. Object usage.
I know. It was really good naming. I'm proud of you guys.
Yeah. Solid.
You guys did a good job. So it was actually released in 9212, if I'm not mistaken. Clayton will correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe he remembers. I don't know. But
it was a really long time ago.
Right? You put the finishing touches on it?
Finishing touches.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it can actually help you understand the frequency of which your objects are being used. And funny enough, when I read the software update guide, I read it on that. I did. Oh. I was actually very curious about it when I heard about it at a conference a couple years ago. It stated this information will enable you to determine objects that need to be validated prior to upgrading or applying an update to your system. And I'm like, oh, that seems reasonable. So obviously, reading through it, I'm like, oh, there's some setup that's required. No big deal. We can do that, right? I got people for that. That's not me. You don't want me in there. Mm-mm. That's dangerous. Very dangerous. And I will include a link in the show notes for the setup for anybody that doesn't have it turned on. So you can go harass your CNC people and ask them to turn it on for you. But once you have it turned on, there's actually a detail and a summary tracking option. So the detail is P98911, which is stored in the, anybody know where?
F98911.
Yeah, you guys are good. You kept it consistent.
So did we name it 911 for a reason, Clayton?
Yeah. So it displays all the objects' usage, right? It records them all, except for if you actually specify there's an object that maybe you don't want to record the tracking on it. So you can exclude objects as well, which is nice. And then, of course, there's a summary version. So anyone want to try and guess what that application is? Close. P98902. Again, consistent with GL.
It's always about accounting.
I know, it is always about accounting. So there's a UBE that you can run that'll summarize that. You can summarize it by object name form version. You can also have product code. So it's pretty cool. And you can do it like by day, month, year. So depending on how you might want to report it. For me, we actually don't have the summary UBE running. We have the detail, which is really where I wanted to be anyway, is in the detail. So as I mentioned, I had advocated to have this turned on at my previous employer to obviously help understand what objects we needed to retrofit, because we didn't have good documentation on all of our objects. And when I came in, I'm like, okay, I'd like to have this turned on. So I worked with my CNC and my developer to actually get that up and running for us. And I was super glad when I changed jobs to find out that it was on, at least at the detail level. Again, that's where I wanted to be anyway. So when I was asked a question about the purchase orders, obviously the first thing I did was like, by somebody in the business had asked me a question on purchase orders. And I'm like, oh, let me go see how many versions we have, right? And I was like, 246. How do I know which one they're calling? So open up the 9811, maybe go take that user ID, figure out what they're using so that I can help answer a question to be like, oh, okay, you have this processing option on here, and this is what it's doing. Okay, at least from a learning perspective, it was helpful for me as I started to figure out what my people are using and how they're using it. Obviously, that was very helpful for me.
Oh, yeah.
And still is. But then as I've come to these conferences and we've started to talk about modernization, I was like, you know, this might be a really handy tool to have for me to use for what should I modernize. I have access into what people are using and how often they're using it. I know early on in one of our podcast episodes, Shannon Allred had talked about finding that low-hanging fruit, right? So if you get in there and you see a pattern or you see somebody continuing to use the same application, it might be worth some questions. So
you could use it effectively as a conversation starter with your users.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And what I've found, and we'll get into this in just a second, is it kind of is like it drops little breadcrumbs, you know, where your people are going in your system. Mm-hmm. It is helpful from that perspective to be like, oh, they're going in here and doing X, Y, and Z. Oh, they're doing that again. Oh, they're doing it again. Why? I'm the person that's genuinely curious, right? So I'm always asking why. I'm sure my parents loved that as a kid. So yeah, that's kind of how this whole thing got started.
Right. When we looked at it, like you said, with modernization, we've got all these tools. We get asked this quite a bit. You know, where do I use Cafe One? Where do I use Orchestrator? Where do I use some of these logic extensions or whatever? How do I determine exactly where to use those things? So again, well, let's go look at what people are actually doing. And when we actually did a process modeler, how many of you out there have looked at process modeler that we did a couple releases ago? Yay, nay, couple.
Looked at it.
One of the thoughts that we had with process modeler, and which is enterprise automation in general, was to try to figure out not just usage patterns, but where everybody was spending time. What's taking the longest? What are your blind spots, right? Like, so we looked at, one of the thoughts we had was overlaying this data as well over those processes so you can actually understand who the users are, how much time are they spending. Again, that's where your opportunity is going to come from to obviously have a conversation as well as look to implement some of these tools, right?
Yep, absolutely. So,
what does it look like?
It's really pretty.
It's a
spreadsheet.
There we go.
So let me tell you about this. What I did is I started with, obviously, the 9811. I tried to filter out most of what I could figure were our system IDs. I didn't realize we had so many. I'll talk to my people about that. Jeez. And originally, when I put this together, I was like, oh, I'll just select, like, since the beginning of the year.
Mm-mm. Nay, nay.
Nay, nay. Excel did not like that.
No.
Excel said, nope, too many rows for you. Try
how
again.
How many did you have? 3 million?
3 million. Wow. Yeah. 3 million rows of data. I was like, oh, well, we're going to have to get it down to something a little more manageable so that we can talk about this. So what I ended up doing was just under a month of data that I pulled. I did, as I said, I did filter out the system IDs as best I could. I did realize earlier that I was like, oh, I missed a couple. Oh, well, no big deal. And then I also, what else did I do with it? I specifically filtered for production only. I don't care about PYDV right now because I know what's happening in those environments because I'm the source of the problem. Most of it would be me and you'd be wondering what the heck I was doing there. Kicking off a whole bunch
and
of customers.
And if you can't answer the question about what you were doing, well,
right.
We got other problems,
we got
right?
other problems, right? Obviously, I kicked it out into Excel because, again, that's where I live when I'm analyzing data. When you kick it out, the date updated and time fields are scrunched together. So I did text a column that because that annoyed me because I couldn't filter very well. Got to have my filters. So if you see an extra column in this spreadsheet, that is why. That's me. So what I did is I actually started just kind of thumbing through the data, and I'm like, oh, good grief. I'm not going to figure anything out from this. So, of course, I'm a fan of pivot tables. Anybody else in here a fan of pivot tables? There's got to be at least. I know Natalie's got to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I threw together a pivot table and was like, okay, what are the objects that we really are using a lot of? And said, give me the object, whether it's an application or UBE, the version, just so I can see. Now, I scrunched the data on P4310 and P4312 because, well, those will become non-problem. They might be problems still.
Oh, this gets back to the comment in the keynote about Coupa.
Yeah, yeah. So we're looking to implement Coupa. So we'll be launching them, but it'll be the orchestrator launching them as we do our integration, so our integrations. So I started scrolling through this, and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Well, obviously, we've got some printer selections. You know, we've got some stuff. So I just kind of, yes, Clayton?
I'm sorry, why aren't you using the summary option?
Because it's not turned on. I know.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
If you turn on the summary option, you can turn on the purge.
Yeah.
Ah.
Purge, you get rid of the detail.
No, I want the detail.
We purge over a million records a day.
A day. Wow.
Yeah, we don't. We just...
The detail, so we use the
summary. Yep. See, for me, I actually... The detail is more helpful to show exactly where my users are going, right? On this day, from this time, they did this thing 12 times in a row. Why? Right? Right.
I mean, you're looking for that granularity
yes.
to see those patterns. I mean, it probably makes... When you're auditing and using it for these other reasons, it makes sense that you don't want to get lost in that detail. But for what we're trying to accomplish here,
yeah.
it really actually is important to be able to see at that level. So you can't just get rid of it. Yeah. Yes.
The CNC team only wants the summary so they can save space on their servers.
Of course.
The CSAs want the details so we know what our users are doing.
Yep.
Exactly.
See, then we have to fight, right? I haven't had to fight my CNC yet for it. He's been good.
Crying because it's slow, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Ouch. Now, how slow is slow? But yeah, depending on who you are, who the audience is, what your requirements are, everything changes, right? So
then I'm like, well, let me just throw in another pivot table by user.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look at when I originally did this, I did not, well, I guess I could unapply this, but... I had all of the dates filtered on. But then I was like, oh, gosh, that's a lot of data. I just want one day. Just one day to start with, right? This is going to be an evolving process for me. So I need a starting spot, so just give me one day. So, of course, what do I choose?
Month end.
Very good. You guys are quick. I wanted to know how many batches we were posting at month end, actually. And I did. I was curious. So on month end day, we have somebody that's doing something 900 times. What are they doing? Well, we'll find out. Well, actually, we didn't pull into this one, did we?
No, you can just double click on it.
Oh, yeah, I can double click on it.
That's the beauty of pivot tables.
I know, you can double click.
So
to me, I was like, oh my gosh. You know, as I go through here, oh, look, we ran the GL post 11 times in a minute. 11 different times in a minute. My question is that screams to me is like, does this user not know they can select multiple batches and go row post by batch? Huh. Okay. Maybe this is an opportunity, right?
It's a training opportunity.
It could be an educational offering, yes.
And if you had Oracle Guided Learning, you could get context
nice
aware.
Plug.
Hey, see? See?
Yeah, there's a... Wow.
All right, we've got some partners in here that do that, and we've got customers that have done it with them. It is a
we
great
should have
tool.
Them on a podcast.
We should
actually,
have them on the podcast.
I'm curious.
Maybe when I'm down under, I can...
You could do that.
I could.
Okay, I'm in. This was kind of where I started, right? I actually, believe it or not, I did try to prompt chat.
We did. Yeah,
we both did. How did it work for us?
Failed miserably.
Okay, yeah, we'll give it an F.
It gets, you know, sometimes it, what do I say? Well, it was more summarized. It just didn't go to the level of detail. I think if we had more time, we could have spent...
I think we have to train it to say, okay, this is the type of pattern. Like, it doesn't know JDE well enough to know that my user went in, did an inventory adjustment, then went to post their batch, and this is the steps that they took. So it might do a really good job of saying that they went here and here, but it doesn't get the next steps after that.
Yeah, which... I mean, it came back basically saying, hey, guess what? Here's your top apps. Here's your top users. It could do that pretty easily, but the pattern recognition on a daily basis, that's where things just started to fall over, which is why you have to do stuff like this. You pick a date, you sort it based on time, and then you just watch what the user actually does.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. You just start. That's honestly what I did is I actually picked a user that I knew. Again, being newer at a company, I don't know necessarily what all my users are doing, right? We have quite a few of them. So what exactly are they doing? Who does what, right? So I just grabbed a user, drilled into the data for a day. Again, I'll find it yet. Is it the GL Post one? Yes.
I believe it is. Yes.
Yeah. So this person,
you've got stuff highlighted. It must be.
I started highlighting because I was like, oh my gosh, look at this person running GL Post as like, okay, I'm getting tired of this. I could have done advanced stuff to have it do the highlighting for me. But I was like, oh, good grief. I need to figure out what this user is doing. Why are they doing this? Why are they posting all these batches? What is their function, you know, as in their job that is requiring them to do that? Oh, here we go. Let's post GL.
An entire page.
An entire page worth. Okay, we're going to do 30 GL posts. Okay, well, what else were they doing before that? Or is this person strictly reviewing journal entries, right? Are they, is that their sole function at month end to go review everybody's journal entries? Okay. All right. Interesting. Oh, look, even more. Oh, my goodness. What are we doing
here? Again, it's a day.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
This is a day. Like, how many times can you run GL Post? Do they have repetitive clicking? I don't know. They call it carpal tunnel in your wrist, but what is it? Mouse finger? I don't know.
Whoa.
Because it's bad.
I'm not like, sure I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
Well played.
Thanks. So it's really kind of an amazing tool to use for something other than just how many times are we opening this application. It gives you an insight, especially because of the date timestamps, that you can kind of try to follow through. You know, like this individual, I know we were clearly running payroll on the 31st.
But look at the repetition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, back to these patterns. So
right. You
saw volume there with GL Post and you wonder, well, what exactly are they doing? Now you've got this repetition back and forth and back and forth between what is this employee payroll revisions, history window, back to work with, back to alignment. Back, you just see it over and over and over. And again, what exactly are they doing?
Why are they doing it? And this is where I think when you start seeing these patterns, and if you aren't necessarily as familiar with what your business users are doing, I mean, most of us support a multitude of business people, right? It's not like we have five, so I know all of everything that those five users are doing. No? Yeah, right? So trying to understand what they're doing in the system, this is a really great opportunity to start the conversation with them. And I think this is the most, what I would say is the most important part of this aspect is not taking it back to them and being like, so why did you do this? I see that you did this. Why?
Well, you don't want to make it some sort of inquisition or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not going to interrogate them, right?
No.
I mean, we're not punishing them.
No.
We're genuinely curious.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I mean, if you do have these patterns, you go talk to this user, but would you approach them with, can you explain this? Or would you actually just say, look, why don't you show me what you're doing on a regular, like, don't even mention this.
No.
Let's just see if that pattern comes out. Because if you mention it to them, chances are they're not going to do what they typically do. If they have to think about what they're doing, they change what they're doing. So it's like, just show me, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. it's okay to have an idea. Like if, for example, you're looking through the data, one of the things I saw is somebody was going in multiple times from supplier ledger inquiry into GL distribution and payment inquiry. They're opening those applications. Well, I immediately, one of my favorite tools is CafeOne, right? So why wouldn't I have that in my back pocket, maybe have it built in my DV environment, and when I sit with them and they show me that, then take the opportunity to say, hey, would this be really helpful for you? Do you think this you could see yourself using this? Again, it's a simple thing to build. It's pretty easy. It's pretty quick. And you can usually promote it through your environments pretty quickly, depending on what your company allows for what goes to production. If it's always got to be a CNC, if it's, you know, whatever. Whatever you have to work around. But it's relatively painless and easy at least to move between the environments. But maybe as you spend time with them and you start showing these things, or maybe they want, they're in that supplier ledger inquiry and they're like, gosh, it would really be nice if I could see the PO line number. Well, I can go add that to the grid for you right here. Boop, here you go. Right? If you spend time with your users, you build that trust, right? They're willing to start coming to you and saying, hey, I know you did that thing for me, so I see my check payments over here. Oh, the CafeOne. Yeah. Do you think you could do that here on the AR side for me too? They start thinking about their jobs in a different manner, how they can utilize the system easier, better, faster. They can get their jobs done with a couple less clicks.
Well, I mean, again, they can't suggest to you how to make their Danda life better when they don't know what's possible.
No.
Right? So you can't go to the users either and say, well, tell me where you'd like a CafeOne. And they'll say, a cafe what?
Is that McDonald's? Is that a McDonald's cafe?
Cafe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once you show them, though, and once you know that you get that validation, their wheels will start turning as well. I think one of the other patterns we looked at, we didn't get a chance to necessarily test it out, but when you're looking at submitted jobs, how often are people going in and reading PDFs?
Oh, gosh.
How often are they actually launching and reading PDF?
Not often enough.
Ouch.
Ooh, I feel like mine are going in there a lot from what I could see.
Well, and so people are looking for, where do I apply AI? And what's the, you know, one of the things that is really simple to do is have it analyze PDFs for you. So if you got people going through 50, 60 pages of PDFs because they're trying to figure out, in our case, ESU violations, you know, dependency violations, why would I have somebody today going through and manually going through each one of those PDFs to look through that when I can drop that into chat and have it do it for me? So again, working with your users on where they can get a quick win. That doesn't sound fancy, right? It's not some sort of insights that you're getting from the data that sounds great, but a lot of those bigger projects that require that, they fizzle out because they get too complicated, they take too much time. It's actually this low-hanging fruit and the boring stuff that is where a lot of this lies. So.
Right. And to me, it's a starting place, right, for your modernization journey, maybe, if you want to use that, where you can start with these lower pieces of fruit and get them used to some of the new look and feel for using these different things so that when you bring in something a little more advanced, they maybe are a little bit more welcoming to that change instead of, whoa, what did you just do? And how come I can't just click on these five things to get that one piece of information? I don't go through all these menus anymore. That's too confusing for me, right? Change is hard for our users, right? If we go in thinking that we're solving a problem and making it easier for them, I mean, we all mean well, but sometimes we fail to step back and consider it from their perspective and put some amount of change management. This does not need to be a project with full-on change team to go out. It's little things that we can do to help build trust with our users, right? And then when we do come to them with, hey, we need your help to test in an upgrade, are you willing? They might be a little more excited,
might be able to help you.
They might be like, oh, what's in this new release? What do we get out of this? Yeah. What are we going to do with this?
It's funny you say, you know, folks are adverse to change. We were just having lunch and we almost couldn't get past this point in the conversation because what was actually being asked was, how far back can I go so that there is no change? So we are 10 years behind. We're going to upgrade, but I don't want to upgrade to like whatever the latest release is because you're going to give me Redwood. You're going to change. Like, I can't change any of that for my users. So I don't want any of that. And oh, by the way, I don't want to upgrade the OS either. So how far back can I upgrade myself? I'm like, what? So how far back do you get to go to minimize the amount of change for my users? I was just like, I'm not sure I've ever thought of an upgrade that way. I know we're getting a lot of strange looks, but,
right?
But it's just like people are so used to what they have. They don't want the change. Heck, I mean, this same IT department was getting phone calls at least once a month asking for their green screen. They went off a world 3 years ago. They're still getting calls for where is my green screen. So that adverse to change, right? So
anyway. Yeah, the culture of your organization obviously plays a role in this too, right?
Role.
It does play a huge role. You definitely have organizations or maybe even groups of people within your organization that are all about change. And then you have the ones that aren't, you know, so how do we bridge that gap and bring them together? Well, I think building that trust with the business by even doing little things like this that also help you modernize, right, and take advantage of tools in your toolbox, as I always say, to help make their lives easier, but doing it with their buy-in, right, not forcing it. I feel like oftentimes IT is the one that comes in and says, we're upgrading, and here you go, and slams it down.
Deal with it.
Get over it, as my dad would say. Get over it.
Yes.
You know, here's your change. Get over it.
One thing I wanted to bring up, too, because we get this a lot, like, what enhancements should we take, right? What have you done for me lately? What enhancements could actually help us out? This was another thing that I was, as we were going through here, I'm like, where have we actually made improvements that maybe people didn't know about? That's where some of the printer changes that we have coming, maybe it doesn't address some of the patterns directly in here, but I think, Clayton, what is the enhancement that's going to be coming?
The enhanced print options.
The enhanced print options, yeah. We name stuff really straightforward, don't we? So you don't have to actually check out and change the actual version by version, but you can do this in a central location. How much is that going to save? But I'm looking for those connections, like in whatever we see in the data, how can we correlate to some of the stuff that we've actually delivered where people may not know that we've actually made a good improvement there and you should take it. So
this really is digital gold, as you've referred for me, it absolutely is for a number of reasons as I get to know what my business is doing. But as I want to enable JD Edwards or more of it in my company, this is an awesome place for me to start. Is it my end all be all? No. I don't know that there is a tool per se out there that is, right? I think there is a lot to be said for making those relationships and connections with your business. Because not only that, it can help drive change from them and it can help them trust you when you want to bring a change to them.
To them.
Right?
Yeah. So have you guys thought about object usage tracking in this way before? We thought it might be somewhat of a novel approach, right? Get down into the detail, figure out where to start.
Right? Yeah.
As we went through that, I mean, you guys that are familiar with object usage tracking, any suggestions on other things we may have wanted to consider that we haven't? I mean, because arguably we just started playing around with this recently. Yes.
Okay, hold on. Don't ask your question. I'm going to try not to trip. Okay.
Good luck. I mean, there
I
is a mic in There's the middle like, of the room.
Oh, yeah, there is one.
But then he has to get up. That's rude.
So I appreciate you, Chandra.
He's got to navigate roles.
No, I was going to say it's also useful for tracking like your true custom, purely built in-house applications, reports, those types of things, to see if they're still being used, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can retire them.
Yes. That is a great also like modernization strategy. I can remove all this stuff from my menus, right? I can clean it up. I can maybe make it look a little prettier even. Oh, while I'm in here, I'm just going to do this one thing for them. Maybe they'll notice, maybe they won't. It might look a little different.
Absolutely.
So, anybody else have any thoughts or comments or ways maybe you have looked at modernizing?
The one thing we do for our code current process is when we have change, we end up with an object that says in production that it's been used before in this detail, and you go in and look at it, and it's like, okay, this thing's been called once in the last 6 years.
Wow.
So it really helps us identify objects that technically are changing, but we don't have to worry about
it. You don't have to worry about it. Yep. So scope of testing, scope and all that, right?
One quick comment for that. How many of you have put in something that the business is like, oh my God, I gotta have you do this, and you customize it? Okay. And then how many times do you think they actually use it? Exactly. So yeah. There's your proof when, you know, management comes to you and says, well, we need to do this for this group because they really need it.
Yeah.
You can say, well, the last 5 requests that you've had have resulted in those things being executed twice over the period of 18 months. Is this really where you want me spending my money?
So I may be missing this on the screen, but how do I track it back to the actual menu that it's used on? And so how I know which menu items are not being used?
Clayton's like, no, we don't have that answer.
There's a shaking your head from Clayton. Maybe that's an enhancement we should request.
I believe that's an SR and an enhancement request.
That's like a great enhancement request.
For the SIG.
I agree. That's a phenomenal.
Yeah, you could create a view.
F00821?
821, okay. Where all the menus are stored, the details.
Ah.
Yep.
I was going to say, just export that and then cross-reference it with AI even, right? You could just throw it at that and say, show me everything here that's matching here. And
trust yep. but verify, because I did throw this at AI and the results were not pretty.
You can create your own pivot table.
I can create my own pivot table.
Yep.
Because we all know that's where I live anyway. All right.
So we should probably end on our typical, right?
Typical style?
Typical style. We've got
Midwestern style? Yeah,
yes.
Because that's how I roll.
Oh, my.
All right. So,
I see what you picked here. You guys are going to enjoy this.
So how many of you have heard of the term hockey hair?
Come on, hair.
Yeah.
Everybody from Wisconsin and Minnesota are like, yes.
My people from the Midwest okay. So the roots of hockey hair, it's anything from a classic mullet, like the mullet style, you know, business in the front, party in the back type of hairdo, as we always used to say, or like the sweeping flow style of hair that you oftentimes see hockey players with. It actually stretches back to the 1960s. Some believe like that mullet style began as a way to like help keep their neck warm when they actually used to play hockey the way it was intended outside. Right.
I don't see hockey players being worried about their neck getting cold.
Well, that's also true.
To show a video, and the first thing you're going to see is, you know, somebody with missing 3 teeth.
Well,
I don't think a little chill on the back of the neck was really bothering them.
That's
just
also
saying.
Fair. Good. Fair point. Well made. So over time, it actually developed into a signature look for Minnesota players, and they refer to it in certain styles of flow. Like luscious lettuce, or flowback, or salad, or chop.
Chop.
All becoming kind of part of our local, lexicon or verbiage, right? So what I'm about to show you actually started in 2005 when a Minneapolis suburb marketing executive, go figure, creative, created the All Hockey Hair Team. So it was originally conceived while writing a short-lived Twin Cities sports show.
Oh.
So the idea came that you would rank players not only by goals and assists, but by their salad or their go with the flow. So, oh yeah, this is phenomenal. So he uploaded this YouTube video ranking and it took off. And people are like, are you doing that again? Are you doing it again? He's been doing it since. So we are going to play a little clip of it.
Hello and welcome to the All Hockey Hair Team. For this year's theme, I win Olympics, because who doesn't love a ring salad? We know hockey players care about their hair, but Milan had mullets, stripes. The quad god was a salad saint. Johnny brought it. Even our free skiers were listening to Freebird. So Olympics it is. So let's flow for gold. Let's turn on channel 45 and light the torch for some Hockey Hera Olympics and see who made the flow diem. Because this is Minnesota. Everyone has good hair. We teach them young. And this year's tourney had it all. Okay, let's get into the salad shenanigans, shall we? We had LeBron's. We had a St. Cloud Shadur. We had leg lifters and weed whippers, gum chewers, bubble blowers, hugs, woos, and the rarely if ever seen double woo. Underbites, benders, and airbenders. Delano brought the tiger stripes, and let me be first to say, they were looking great. Cato West took us to Comic-Con. We had the Bat Signal, the Human Torch, Spider-Man. Wait a minute. It's clear the Cato Boys' pregame meal is Fruity Pebbles. Hibbing brought it again this year. Their flow was so vintage, I thought about putting rabbit ears on my television. The guys bought into the Olympics theme as the skate-ups had a higher degree of difficulty. We had tributes, new school looks, and some old school mullets. Mata Midai had some good hockey hair, but a dirty windshield. Don't blame me, blame this guy. If anyone in War Road is looking for a great name for your band, may we suggest Clorox and Caterpillars. If the Olympics taught us anything, it's that the girls are as big a gangster as...
He does this as a fundraiser. The money he raises goes back to actually help adaptive athletes. So it is, it's pretty cool.
The guys...
It is long, but...
Dodge County crushed the girls' tournament. These ladies were inventing all sorts of stuff. They got interactive. They were mean mugging. They were googly eyeing. The only thing they got wrong is they should have been rock, because from the looks of it, there's no scissors in Dodge County, including this legend. If you want to send her fan mail, I think she lives on Peekaboo Street.
In case we all forgot what great hockey hair looks like, our coach provides lettuce leadership. Delano should be building a salad statue for this guy.
Number 10. A lot of people think that's a hockey stick on the Hibbing jersey. It's actually an L for lettuce. Number 9. Gentry may be new school, but that's an old school mullet right there.
That's fantastic.
I know.
I am inspired.
Aren't you, though?
I am.
Is this maybe your next look?
Possibly.
All right. Well.
After it gets cut off at In Focus.
That's true.
Are we teasing that?
We should be.
So we might be doing a fundraiser at In Focus where we will raffle for the opportunity to do what Clayton's been putting a bounty on my head for 5 years. He is so happy. It's a dream come true. So somebody will get to cut off my ponytail. And somebody will also...
He would like it.
Yeah. And somebody then gets to shave it after that. So, and then mine didn't get long enough, but yours is long enough.
Yes. So we will also raffle up the opportunity to donate my hair. So fundraisers will go to Quest for Good. So,
woo-hoo.
Yes. So... For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us here or at the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya!
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDEconnection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest J.D. Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.